lots of people talk about the idea that we want to achieve our goals. We want to decide on what we want, and then we want to be able to take effective action in order to achieve the acquisition of whatever those goals happen to be. Money, fame, health, happiness, you name it. There is another factor besides the establishment of clear, specific goals, and that is the perceptions of threat. And today I want to talk about our perceptions of threats. The perceptions of threats, the marketing of threats, and the manipulation of people due to ego drives comprise the real reasons why there is so much unhappiness and illness and suffering in the family of man on planet Earth. If we could manage effectively our perceptions of threats so that we were accurate in the assessment, that's an important thing if we want to survive, we would have so much less fear, so much less anger, so much less helplessness, addiction, and blame in our lives. Just the awareness needed to recognize that threats are largely imagined and grown in human consciousness would free a lot of us to take new perspectives. It's like, that's a threat? Yeah. You imagined it. You made it up. The way you processed information made that be true. It's like, oh, well, if I have that degree of power, maybe I need to take a look at this and see if I can establish a new perspective on that threat. Exactly. The ability to look deeply enough to know that's not a threat. That's not a threat. Removes the power from the fears and gives it back to our higher thinking capability. Soon as we diminish the threat, our ability to use our intellect is improved. When we perceive a threat, whether it's real or imagined, we trigger stress in the body, which leads to huge physiological changes within the body. Everybody has heard of fight or flight, or fight, flight, or freeze. And, you know, these things could be really important survival impulses in the appropriate situations. But being activated excessively or inappropriately simply reduces our chances of survival. The survival instinct of fight or flight is implicated as the main factor in 85 to 99% of all illnesses. So I could say this, that fight or flight is a survival instinct, and it is also a death instinct. I'm guessing that the perception of threats requires certain components. Number one, I'm guessing that the estimation that something has the power to harm us, overpower us, overwhelm us, dominate us, or reduce us, even to the point of death, is what we would consider to be a threat. Basically, we would think and feel that we are being pushed down the spectrum of life force toward zero, non-existence. So if you took life and you made a horizontal line with 100 on the right end and a zero on the left end, and you could say, threats are pushing me toward the zero, where I'm going to die and cease to exist. Like, okay, that's a threat. Yep. And we're designed to prevent that from happening. The estimation, this is point number two, that we don't have and we can't have the resources necessary to defend our identity, our individuality, our property, our bodies, the things that are important to us. Basically, we would process the environmental signals as being, in quotes, more than us, and we would be calculating or estimating ourselves as being not enough. Whenever I think of those two words together, not enough, I capitalize the N and I capitalize the E, because I actually think that not enoughness is a true threat to us because it's imagined, not enough. So if we imagine that we're not enough to have what we want, to get our needs met, to be who we want to be, or even to survive as ourselves, we're dealing with an imagined threat. Depending on our experiences in life, we can have a tendency to perceive threats more or less than another person. Think of it. The availability of loving, welcoming, supportive energy will orient us, if that's what we received in childhood, it's going to orient us towards feelings of security. Ah, my house was like Ozzie and Harriet. My parents were so loving, so kind, had plenty of time for me, attended to my needs, respected me, listened to me, honored my boundaries, helped me become more aware. Every time I did something that could be considered to be an error, then they said, oh, let's talk about this and see if there's a way to gain some more awareness about that particular activity. Wouldn't that have been nice? I didn't experience that, and I doubt if you did either. That lack of love, lack of wantedness, lack of caring, and so on, is going to set us up for perceptions of threats to our existence, to us getting our needs met. That is much more common than that fictitious scene that I just described a moment ago. Because we are so physical world oriented, we can see the ordinary ebbs and flows of energies as dangers. If we were standing outside and we perceive, oh yeah, heat and cold can be threats to our lives if they are extreme. But ordinarily, we don't go into fight or flight when summer arrives or winter approaches. We go into the closet for a change of clothing, right? We add clothing for the wintertime. We remove clothing for the summertime. Not a big deal for us. Right now, where I was when I was conceptualizing this idea, it was overcast with a forecast of impending rain. How much of a threat do I perceive because it's threatening rain? When I go out to the gym, I could get wet. But when I think of it, if I go to the gym, I'm going to get wet because I'm going to work out and I'm going to create perspiration when I go. As I do the exercises, I am elevating the heat in my body, and my body, in order to maintain balance, is going to perspire. Oh, so if I go out in the rain, I'm going to get wet. If I go to the gym, I'm going to get wet. How much are those two experiences threatening to me? Not very much. If the sun comes out, actually, when I'm walking back home from the gym, I'm going to, on the one hand, maybe dry out a little bit from the perspiration, but if it's hot enough here in Florida, I'm going to start to perspire again and get wet all over again. Now, wouldn't it seem silly for a person to get all upset and worked up because of the idea of wetness, either arriving from the external, like rain, or arriving from the internal, such as perspiration? If I have the habit of exaggerating the consequences of discomfort, I'm going to perceive more threats. Said another way, if a person is only comfortable when the temperature ranges from, say, 72 degrees Fahrenheit to 74 degrees Fahrenheit, that person is going to perceive a lot more threats than, say, a person whose acceptable temperature range is 50 degrees Fahrenheit up to 80 degrees Fahrenheit. That first person is like on a very narrow tightrope of temperature. Anything below or above that is going to ruin my day. It's going to make me, And they will perceive much more in the way of threats than the second person with the wider range of acceptance. When I used to take my puppy Nikki Nouveau outside in the rain, at first I tried to hurry her so she didn't get wet and I didn't get wet. I was mainly concerned about me because she's so little that when she came back into the lanai, I'd pick her up and dry her off with a towel. But it was me I was thinking of, like, I'm going to melt. But after a few times of watching her attitude, which was, what rain? She wanted to walk around before she decided to pee. She wanted to smell here, smell there, try to determine if the rabbits and squirrels had been in her yard. And the rain didn't mean anything to her. Didn't mean anything to her. So while she was sniffing and checking everything out in the yard, I started to observe and appreciate that my surroundings are same as her surroundings. Why do I need to be concerned about a few raindrops hitting me? And after that, I enjoyed going out with her, no matter what the weather was. It's like, oh. My wife, Mary Ann, is a winery owner. She taught me about this concept called microclimates. Microclimates. A microclimate, those are the realities that different geographical locations, even close together, one side of a hill versus the top of the hill versus the other side of the hill, are going to be different. They're going to have different microclimates, little teeny areas. So if you looked at a climate in Sonoma County, California, or Sonoma Valley, California, that's more specific still, and then the microclimates are in these little teeny bit of areas, smaller than zip codes by far, and you go, oh, these things have different climates based upon the slope of the hills, the movement of winds to them and around them, the sun exposure, and even the soil composition. All of these factors influence the grapes that are growing in that microclimate. Now, it makes perfect sense to be concerned about that if we're talking about grapes and grapevines, because the effects are going to be so obvious. Wow, the grapes didn't grow here. Or, wow, they grew tremendously beautifully here. The grapes didn't grow, but the vines grew really well here. Well, nobody is really growing vines. They're growing grapes. It's the fruit, the results that people are interested in mostly as a winery owner. Microclimates. You and I all know that the weather changes, sometimes abruptly. Flash floods, big deal recently in the news, blizzards, and similar occurrences climatically are threats. You and I also know people who change, and some of them who change really quickly and less predictably than the weather does. If we could adopt the same viewpoints about the weather and how it expresses itself and when people express themselves, we might go into the self-protect mode less frequently. There's no doubt that for most people in the Western world, people have been greater threats to them than the weather. In deprived countries, though, weather, famine, lack of shelter, lack of water are likely to be bigger threats. But for you and I, people will tend to be the bigger threats. In California right now, including where Marianne's winery is, they are experiencing a drought. The threat is insufficient energy in the form of water. Miners that have been trapped in a cave-in could be threatened by a diminishing supply of energy in the forms of air. Hey, the miner down below, 200 feet below the surface of the air, he's running out of air. That's a problem. Running out of water, running out of food. All of those things are threats. So it's an insufficiency. But I suppose that if we really looked at it, the threats that I just mentioned could be looked at as an insufficiency of one thing or an excess of another. For example, let's take the drought. We usually consider that to be an insufficiency of rain. But we could say it's an excess of dryness. Like, oh yeah, yeah, too much dryness here. Yep. There's got to be some sort of a balance, right? Because when it does start to rain in certain places where it's been dry for a while, it ends in flooding and mudslides and all kinds of devastation because the ground can't absorb the water. So somewhere in between no rain and a lot of rain is what we would consider to be balanced. Maybe we could even say for those miners, not that it would make them feel any more comfortable, the lack of air is also an increase in the vacuum down at the bottom of the cave. Oh, well. For children who experienced insufficient nurturance, insufficient love, insufficient tenderness, we could also say they experienced an excess of what? Neglect and indifference, maybe even abuse. Too much abuse equals too little love. Actually, any amount of abuse equals too little love. You don't need a lot of abuse to have too much. Any abuse indicates too little love. Now, adults could look up, see a blue sky, and then... No, they wouldn't. Adults wouldn't look up, see a blue sky, and go, oh, this means rain. No, they wouldn't. They would be correct if they said that. Oh, that blue sky means rain. Not today or tomorrow or the next week, but at some point it's going to rain. Yes, but the blue sky doesn't cause it to rain. Blue sky indicates a particular condition. We know that the absence of clouds in a blue sky indicates a lack of atmospheric humidity or moisture needed for precipitation. No clouds, no precipitation. Now, adults know that. In Florida, where I live, we have the most lightning strikes of any of the states in America. I used to live in Kansas City, Missouri. Between Missouri and neighboring state of Kansas, we used to watch the most amazing lightning storms. It was like fireworks on a 4th of July, except bigger and more magical, and for people who are on the receiving end of those lightning strikes, probably more terrifying. Obviously, lightning storms require certain environmental conditions to exist. And a way of saying that, they require up in the environment of the sky an imbalance of energy. When I talk about drought, it's also an imbalance of energy. On a lot of levels, this is the problem. The way we perceive the imbalance of energy. This is the problem. We become afraid of the imbalance. We fight to end the imbalance. We run away to end the imbalance. We become addicted to substances and activities and even people in order to deal with the imbalance. We self-punish because of the imbalance. We act out greed and violence because of the imbalance. And in America, we develop fatal lifestyles because of the imbalance. We perceive the energy imbalances to be the threats when we perceive that we are helpless in their presence. I'm going to repeat that. We perceive the energy imbalances to be the threats when we perceive we are helpless in their presence. What child hasn't been near a malfunctioning adult whose behaviors scared them? And furthermore, what child hasn't realized that they were too small to remedy the situation? They were too small to do anything about it, to calm the storms of a raging adult. For those of us who grew up in volatile home environments in which the human energy was unpredictable in terms of love or caring or kindness or safety or respect for boundaries, the habit of perceiving threats in every situation can be a habit, a disempowering habit. As children, we probably developed the fears that we caused this energy imbalance by something we said or didn't say, something we did or didn't do, something we had or didn't have. Rationally, though, this is like saying the lightning rods, because of their limited size and limited ability to express themselves or defend themselves, cause the thunder and lightning in those homes. Of course, that didn't happen. Rationally, we know that. But as a child, emotionally, that may not be how we processed those energy imbalances. As little children, we tend to think of ourselves as the center of the universe. And if we're the center of the universe and all these energy imbalances are happening in our environment, and these malfunctioning big people, mothers and fathers and older siblings and aunts and uncles and grandparents, are malfunctioning, whose fault is it but the center of the universe's? Let me go back to the idea of microclimates. Every person you know, every person I know, including you and including me, is like a moving microclimate. If we saw ourselves as like these little storm fronts or not, moving around all the time, we're these energy patterns moving around all the time, that's true, right? But we see ourselves as blondes and brunettes and Caucasians and African Americans or Asian Americans or Native Americans. That's how we see energy patterns. Males and females and children and adults. That's how we label these energy patterns. But we're basically like moving microclimates. We know we all can be sunshine and smiles, right? And you know people like that, and you've been that person. And you've also been cloudy with the chance of rain. Rain in this scenario I'm describing as the idea of tears. You could be touched at a moment's notice and you go into tears. Maybe you are familiar with this for yourself, or certainly for other people, windy with gusts of ranting. You know, people all of a sudden, they find a minute later they're yelling and screaming about something. Or frigid, icy storms. Cold, silent, withdrawn, right? You know people like that, and you've been like that. Me too. And we've been dark and grim, and we've been violent and destructive, and there are more ways that we have expressed our microclimate energy as human beings. As our awareness improves, we will be able to perceive the individual energy conditions in the people we deal with. If you could look past that, that person's a blonde. Yep, that may be true. Look at the microclimate, the emotional, energetic microclimate. Ooh, yeah. Like a person who's standing outside noticing a storm approaching, we could like, you know what? We can make the effective decision not to participate in other people's storms. We don't need to volunteer to be a lightning rod. When it's approaching, we could say, nope. My rule to make human behavior more understandable and predictable refers to what we are capable of as we strive to meet our own needs. We're going to strive to meet our own needs. We do it. Plants do it. Single-cell animals do it. Every species does it. We all strive to meet our needs. But human beings, everyone, including you and me, we all act in our own self-interest according to our level of awareness. The more threatened we feel, the lower our level of awareness. That means the more threatened other people feel, the lower their level of awareness will be. And finally, the lower the level of awareness, the worse their energy imbalances will be. And that leads me to my last two points that I wanted to make today. We have the choice to avoid the energetically imbalanced person or situation, or to take steps to facilitate rebalancing. And using the prayer from letter 8 of Christ Returns Reveal Startling Truth, we can notice that we always have access to all the help we can ever need to regain energetic balance, because it's been designed and promised in the way that divine consciousness works for our well-being. It works for us, in us, and through us. And connecting to our source of being is the way to regain balance. If we can regain balance, and we can, it's just a question of deciding to do it and then taking the action to do it in consciousness, that we can reduce the number of perceptions that result in stress and threats in us. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of a prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Listen to it from the point of view how it's talking about supporting us as we have to deal with our learned perceptions of threats. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.